Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Statsheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody, to the Statsheet Podcast. As always, a privilege to be back with all of you listening, joining us every week, maybe some new people. We appreciate you being on board. Simon is in Studio A. Ronan is in Studio B. I am in Studio C. We are cooking. It's been Thanksgiving weekend. It's been fantastic. We've got coaches being fired, coordinators being let go, teams losing that should be winning, winning that should be losing, close games. We have got it all tonight. We are loaded. Let's get to it. First of all, Simon, I want to hit you up. What was your best thing off of Thanksgiving weekend, football or not? Hit us with it.
Everybody, the Pittsburgh Steelers gained 400 yards of offense for the first time in three seasons. They did it in literally the first game without Matt Canada. 58 games, I believe, with Matt Canada at the helm. I think that includes his time as quarterback's coach or whatever it was. But I think officially 44 regular season games, Matt Canada as offensive coordinator. The Pittsburgh Steelers did not gain 400 yards. I think in that time span, there had been like over 300 games where a team had scored, had gained 400 yards of offense, and the Steelers contributed zero times to that. And literally the first game without Matt Canada, they go over 400 yards. En route to a win, obviously, very big points on the scoreboard to get 400 yards, right? No, that is not what happened, but that does not matter. Guys, Kenny Pickett can throw over the middle of the field. That is confirmed. First play of the game, just 23 yards up the seam to a tight end, Pat Freiermuth, something that the Steelers had not done seemingly all season. No pun intended. So, the Steelers offense lives. The season starts now. And we're right back on. So that was my favorite thing. Hate to cheer for a guy being fired, but I've come full circle on this. As a young person, right? As a child, I would root for coaches to get fired. As a young adult, I thought I found enlightenment, and I was like, don't root for people to be fired. And now as a crotchety old person, I'm like, that guy's going to make like $500K a year to be an OC at some college next year. He's fine. Yeah, he's got to move, but you know, whatever. Matt Canada likes moving. He's never stayed in one spot more than 2 years anyways. He'll be fine. It's okay. Everything's great. Here we go. Go Steelers. Ben, what do you got?
I don't use a subject top. I'm going to come back to you, Simon, because the Steelers thing is very much worth talking about. But I want to get Ronan in here for his best Thanksgiving thing from Thanksgiving weekend, and then we'll come back to it. Ronan, welcome aboard, man. As always, we'll hit us with it.
Thank you. Maybe not as passionate with this one, but I was definitely on the edge of my seat. You know, we're sitting there on Black Friday and waiting for, you know, just the game to get over with, pretty much. Sitting there in the fourth quarter, Miami's just kind of stomping out New York, the Jets. And but, you know, to get you through it, sometimes you got to put a little bit of money on the game. And sitting there, it's fourth quarter, less than, I believe, 5 minutes left. Need Raheem Mostert to get a couple more yards. By golly, he runs, scampers in for a 30-yard touchdown. Ronan makes some money. You know, Christmas gifts on me. That's my bit. I mean, that and the stuffing, my first overall pick from last week's draft. I mean, come on now. Come on now, Ben.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I mean, right? I mean, yeah, what's going on? I like it, man. Real quick, my best thing was just the fact that I had 4 days off with the family, football. I got to do everything I wanted to do in 4 days. Absolutely loved it. Best of all, maybe I got to eat all kinds of pie, except no apple pie. Not one person fixed an apple pie. Yeah. So I got the chocolate. I got the pecan. I got the pumpkin. No apple, though. Maybe for Christmas. We'll see.
Something to look forward to.
All right. Simon, I'm coming back to you here. So, listen, you touched on it. We don't actively root for people to get fired. But, listen, when I started having a wife and kids and realizing that there were people out there making tens and 20 times more than what I ever made, and their wives and kids drove nicer cars and lived in bigger houses than I probably ever will, that's when I lost a whole lot of sympathy for people getting fired, to be honest about it. You kind of touched on it. And again, it's never easy, okay, for wives and kids, and for the even the guy himself gets fired. It's embarrassing. You kind of take an ego hit. It's not fun, but still, you mentioned it. All these coordinators and head coaches that are getting fired, by next offseason, most of them will have another $100,000 job, if not a multi-million dollar job somewhere, and life just kind of moves on. So, you know, that's where I'm at. But talk to us a little bit more about the Steelers thing. I actually didn't know, Simon, what you told me, 3 years without 400 yards. I just thought, hey, the last season or two, 3 years without a 400-yard performance. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's disgusting, just absolutely disgusting. And a lot of it you could feel, and a lot of it was blamed on Tomlin and his personality and things that we've talked about on this very podcast, right? The defensive-minded head coach, very conservative, not looking into analytics very much, you know, just like run the ball, don't turn it over, play good defense, kick field goals, win games. But that's not what the evidence that we saw Sunday and what it really is now easy to look back on, right, and see is that, like, Matt Canada walked in and said the number one priority of our offense is to not turn the ball over. So that means run the ball a couple times and then throw to the outside, because then when you're throwing up the sidelines, you can at least throw it out of bounds, or, you know, you have an extra, you know, in basketball, we call it like that. The out of bounds boundary is like an extra defender. It's kind of that way for defending the ball from a defender for a wide receiver, right? Cause you can just throw it as wide as you need to keep a corner from ducking in on it. And so, like, and just very different, just very different. I mean, go look at the passing charts. Just go on Steelers Twitter. The passing charts are going around everywhere. But go on NFL Next Gen Stats. Look at the passing charts from this season with Kenny Pickett. In what was, you know, as a second full year, real first full year as a full-time starter, you would expect there to be some progression and some new things, some new wrinkles, some extra chances being taken. And instead, it's regression, and it's just like the safest throws, the shortest throws you could think of. And then in this game, I mean, the combination of Mike Sullivan calling plays and Eddie Faulkner being the offensive coordinator, just letting it go. And Kenny Pickett even said it in one of the interviews before the game, where it's just like, it's going to be free flowing. It's going to be just play ball. It's going to be take some risks. And that's what they did. And it was at least, it looked like what offenses look like now. It still wasn't very extremely productive, obviously. But 400 yards is 400 yards, and slinging the ball and running the ball, like, it's good stuff, man. It felt good. It felt like I was watching my favorite team play in 2023 instead of in 2009. So it was great.
Yeah, and I will say, going up against still a pretty good defense, which we've seen a lot this year of teams racking up yardage without points. So they're kind of, if they're at least getting the yardage, you think, well, they're at least joining the rest of the crowd now this year, even though they may not be a top offense for the rest of the season. So certainly things to look out there for. Listen, y'all know me, I was a Pickett guy, but I was fully not ready to hop off the Pickett bandwagon, but I was fully prepared to say, hey, maybe I'm just wrong on Pickett. And maybe I still am, but it's always nice to see, if you thought a guy had something, see how he does under a different coordinator / play caller. We'll see in the weeks ahead what that brings. Simon, anything else on the Steelers before we move on, man? We got a lot, but I know this is near and dear to your heart, man.
No, I'm going to try to not get too excited. I think when we last talked on the pod, it was before the Canada firing. And so I had warned you guys about the Steelers curse against backup quarterbacks. The Steelers met that curse, that superstition, with the reverse ended superstition of the firing a coach bump. So you love to see it. You love to see that sort of forward thinking when it comes to those things, and everything negated, and we're all good, man. On to Arizona.
I love it. All right. Rhonda, we just watched Monday Night Football, a heck of a game. Low scoring, but still interesting between the Bears and the Vikings. Vikings have four interceptions. They're going to lose the game. No, wait. They're going to win the game. This is done. Oh, but wait. Here come the Bears with the last-second field goal, last-minute field goal, and the Bears win. So, first impulse off this game.
You know, this was not necessarily the most exciting game. There were many times where I caught myself wondering, how is Luke Getsy still calling plays? Or there was a stat, guys. I don't know if you caught it. I believe in the second or third quarter, where it was Justin Fields' distance per throw, and it was legitimately half a yard. That he doesn't. There's no verticality in this offense whatsoever. And we're sitting here talking about, well, the Bears need to go get a quarterback and this and that and this coming draft because they're set up to, you know, potentially get it. A Caleb Williams, a Drake May, you name it, they can get it. And they got to figure out the play calling first because they might have something there with Justin Fields, but we still don't know. Obviously he has the athleticism because we're sitting there watching them call read options or QB draws with, you know, less than 2 or 3 minutes left in the game. It's second and five. You haven't crossed midfield. You need the first. You need to get down the field and score because you're down and you run the ball with your quarterback. Luckily, he's an athlete and he can get that first down. But the fact that you're sitting there calling or even allowing your quarterback to run at that point in the game, whenever time is of the essence. Chicago staff, they got the win tonight, right? They've gotten four wins this season, which might be, you know, better than what some people might have expected heading into this year. But I still am not confident in this staff whatsoever. I think the front office, in terms of GM, brought in a few good pieces. But the offense, at least the play calling offensively, is questionable, Ben.
Yeah, good, great point. Simon, I'm coming to you. I'm going to read it off real quick. It's kind of comedic. This was a comedic game to just look at the box. This is the possessions in the second half. Vikings downs, Bears field goal, Vikings interception, Bears field goal, Vikings interception, Bears fumble, Vikings touchdown, Bears fumble, Vikings punt, Bears field goal. End of game, Vikings had the one play there at the end of the game. I mean, it's just a weird kind of a game. The one touchdown, all the field goals, all the turnovers. Simon, what stood out to you here, man?
So, I'm with Rona, man. I have a lot of defensive things that I want to talk about in this one. But, I mean, yeah, the first thing that has to be talked about is the Justin Fields and the A-dot. I quickly, while Rona was talking about it, found a couple stats that were out there. At one point in the game, through Fields' first 26 passes, his A-dot was 1.4 yards. He finished the game at 3.5, and that's after, you know, those couple of deep throws on that last drive. And that's tied for the third lowest A-dot in a game this season by a quarterback. And that's just miserable stuff. When I think it was just last week or 2 weeks ago when I reminded everybody about what he did in those couple games before he got hurt, right? The aggressiveness, the throwing the ball downfield, beyond the sticks. And then I rewatched the Bears-Lions game the other night. Actually, that was what I did Thanksgiving night. And he's pushing the ball and he's moving it. And it's not just that he's extending plays and throwing it deep. He's dropping back. He's faking a handoff on a run pass option. And he's hitting DJ Moore over the middle beyond the first down marker. And to do that against the Lions and then to flip to the Vikings, and I'll talk about the Vikings defense, but I guess, you know, you maybe want to use the Vikings defense against them and get it out quick and do some screens and see if you can get some mismatch situations where if they're sending six guys, you have a numbers event. But like, come off of that quickly, go back to what you were doing last week when it's not working, because it certainly wasn't. So to your actual question, Ben, the plays and the downs and the series for these teams, it was just for the Bears a lot of weird stuff from a play calling perspective. But I did think overall both teams played very well defensively to kind of get off the Justin Fields thing. I was really impressed with both defenses in this one, Ben.
Yeah, I agree. And we, you know, we love Brian Flores on this podcast, especially as a DC. I like him as a coach too, but especially as a DC. And we've seen them get not only more aggressive this year, but statistically better as the year goes along. And the Bears defense, we've talked about it either last week or the week before, how the Bears defense is consistently better than it has been the past couple of seasons. Still can't get the quarterback all that often, but everything else is checking out. Run defense, check. Pass defense, check. Not making a whole lot of stupid mistakes that cost you games, check. I mean, it's a good, solid defense, and, you know, looks like something they can use to stay competitive, not only for the rest of this season, but for next year. So, yeah, I agree. Both defenses showed out. And to go back to the Justin Fields thing, Simon, we both like Justin Fields here, even though Ronan's right. We don't yet know how good he really is because all the Bears stuff that goes on every week seems like. But I'm okay with them doing some read option. But you're right, Simon. Get off of that. Let him go back to throwing deep. Let him throw middle. If you have to, if he's just not progressing how you like it, give him two reads on every play. But just keep mixing it up. Don't get stuck there on any one thing where you've got what you call the A dot at 3.5 or 1.4, whatever the heck it is, depending on game time. Don't get stuck on that. Keep mixing it up. He's a playmaker. If you just let him make the plays, he will explode at some point. It might take him 3 quarters. He will do it, though. And yet we just never really saw it this game, never really truly seemingly allowed to open up. Ronan, what else on this game?
You know, I'm still sitting here thinking about, guys, they brought in DJ Moore, and we were really bought in on, you know, Fields finally has a wide receiver one, and then they send him on bubble screens and they line him up in the backfield and have him run flat routes. Like this, how does Chicago fix this short term? Not to get it too far away from the game, but just in terms of where do they go from here? Starting, you know, in practice this week, how do they address, you know, their offensive problems?
Yeah, I'm with you, Ronan. So, you've already mentioned it. Get a little more aggressive. I mean, just get a little more aggressive than what you're doing. There's no reason. You're 4-8. What do you have to sit there and be conservative about? I mean, what are you afraid of? What do you have to lose at this point? Open the freaking thing up, you know? You've got a defense that's going to keep you in most of these games, you know? Maybe not the top teams, maybe not the Eagles. Most of these games that you're playing, what have you got to lose? Open it up here, let Justin Fields do his stuff, man. I mean, so what if he throws a pick a game? I don't care. If you can get him up to 300 yards a game and 60 yards rushing, you know, I'm letting him do it, Simon.
Yeah, so I pulled up their schedule, and I was chuckling at Ronan's question because I thought of like three mean answers first, so I'm glad Ben jumped in on that first. Here's the real stuff. They're going into their bye right now. And so that's good. That's a good start. You have some extra time to get prepared for these last five games, figure out what you want to see from Fields over that time, have plenty of time to install it and rep it, and give them every opportunity to show whatever it is you think you need to see. Now, it's awkward because this coaching staff probably won't be there anyway, so, you know, whatever. But you got the lines again in week 14. I want to see exactly what they did against the Lions in week 11 when Fields is, there's some play action, there's some RPOs that is actually passing the ball. They're using DJ Moore over the middle of the field, different routes. They're just like letting Fields actually drop back and throw the ball. I need to see that against the Lions. Now, unfortunately, week 15, they're playing the Browns. And that's just going to be ugly. That it's going to be bad because it's been bad for just about every quarterback that has played the Browns. But make sure you have a good run game together. Whatever running backs are healthy, make sure you have plenty of different stuff going on for them. Maybe depending on the health of your offensive line, work in some six offensive linemen stuff. Really try to mix it together. We'll talk about some fun offenses at the end of the podcast, but really get a creative run game together, because right now they're like third in rushing yards per game, but they're not doing any. It's mostly just Fields, right? It's mostly Fields on draws and RPOs, keeping it himself. Get a good run game together, and then you have the Cardinals, Falcons, and Packers to end the season. there's no reason Fields shouldn't be able to do what he did against the Lions in week 11 in four of these last five games. So just kind of get back to that, scrap the things you don't like, whatever you didn't feel comfortable with carrying from week 11 to week 12, scrap that, get some new stuff in there, figure out some new, I don't even know if you need a new personnel package or what, but take this bye week to get all the stuff together that'll prove whether or not Fields is the guy you want to go in with next season, and then just unleash it. Cause like Ben said, like you're not playing for anything at this point, except for, you know, pride. And the best way for this coaching staff to try to keep their job is to show that Fields is the right quarterback and show that they're the right coaches to use them. So there's nothing you're holding on to at this point. This is it for all parties involved, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Ronan, real quick, 2 weeks ago, the Vikings were at 6-4, pretty much had a playoff spot, kind of, sort of, you know, at hand. They've lost two in a row, so I'm going to ask you a question here. The four teams, I won't trot through the entire NFC, but Vikings and Packers, your Rams, and then the Seahawks, if only two of those teams get in, which two would you pick at this point? That's the Vikings, Packers, Rams, and Seahawks.
That is a tough one. I would say Seahawks out of those four are probably my favorite. And then, what are the Rams' record at the moment?
5-6.
5-6.
Along with the Packers.
Simon's got the Packers. Okay. Hey, they've won two in a row, right? I mean, and look pretty good doing it.
I'm going to be a homer and say the Rams. Stafford's back. Offense is rolling. Granted, it was against Arizona, but you know what? That's all I needed to see. Kyren Williams is back. I like it.
Fair enough. I'll take the Seahawks, too. And I'll take the Vikings with the thought that, hey, Jefferson's coming back. And Dobbs, we know he's up and down, like a lot of quarterbacks in the league, up and down. So I'll take the Vikings there. Simon, real quick, I want to hear the mean answers that you thought of when Ronan asked who what the Bears could do to improve the offense.
First thought was take play calling away from Luke Getsy. I don't even care who you give it to, just take it away and, like, I don't know, just snap the ball and see what happens. The next thought was fire all of the coaches, just fire them, just get rid of it. Thought number three probably starts getting a little more real answers, right? Like, bring in Ken Dorsey right now to be the offensive coordinator, just like week 13, right? Quinn Snyder this thing, and just like mid-season, just name a new coach. Those would be my top three. Those are the mean answers.
I'm going to ask a mean question here in a second. I have often thought in basketball, especially the NBA 20 years ago, but college basketball, say 3 years ago, when I watched a team score 15 or 19 points in the first half, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could stand at midcourt, me, and shoot baskets from midcourt the whole half and score more than 15 or 19 points. You guys are just overthinking this somehow. And so I'm going to ask you something. Do you think some random high school coach could literally come in here and do a little bit better than, say, some of the play calls we're seeing or some of the offensive structure? I mean, I almost feel like some of these guys just outsmart themselves sometimes.
What an interesting question. I think there could be a coach out there that coaches high school that could come in and say, here are four plays that I really like for Fields, and if you implement these, it'll help. There was a coach, some high school coach that got famous a couple of years ago for being the high school coach that never punted, right? And they went like 35-0 and won their state championship or something like that. And then he went on to be like a small college head coach or something, and just like got the doors blown off, like just had no real understanding of what's going on. So the real answer is no. The fun answer is someone out there could come in over this bye week and implement a few plays that would be successful.
Yeah. All right. I'm often in favor of simplicity, and not always, but that sometimes can be the answer. Okay. I think that's it for Vikings Bears. Any other profound thoughts on that?
Simon? Yeah. Let's give some shout outs to the defense here. I just want to, cause we're talking about Fields and we're talking about, you know, Dobbs and the four interceptions. Actually, I don't even know if we really talked about that. it looked gross offensively. We've talked about these types of games before where it's, was this a bad offense or was this a good defensive game, right? And I think this was slightly bad offense, but I think mostly this was really good defense, especially by the Bears. So the Vikings, we kind of expect this now. We know who they are. The Bears, this has been impressive because they're going into this game, they're the 29th ranked defense by points per game on the season. They give up like 26 a game. They only give up 10 in this one. They've been 25th in DVOA, 27th against the pass, 11th against the run. Part of that issue against the pass is the pressure and sack numbers that Ben kind of alluded to. So I went back and looked. Chicago was 27th in the league in pressures coming into this game and dead last in sacks. So what changed this week? Because they were getting pressures. They were collapsing the pocket that whole first half. Josh Dobbs had no room to be in the pocket. We've talked about how Dobbs is strong in the pocket, can stand there, can elude tacklers. He didn't even have room to really like drop back, set, and throw the ball. And it's Montez Sweat. This was, what, his third, fourth game. He had one sack last week against Detroit, a sack and a half in this one. That trade is starting to pay off. And the defense overall was just swarming. And then Minnesota on the other side. This is also just kind of how you beat Justin Fields. And maybe that's part of the Luke Getsy bunch of screens idea. I kind of mentioned it earlier. Heavy blitz scheme, heavy blitz packages, right? So you get in Fields' head, you make him slow down, you make him really try to think about everything that's going on, and then heavy zone behind that, right? So you're eliminating a lot of the deep looks that you can have, which is Fields' bread and butter, obviously, that great deep ball. So I thought two really good defensive game plans. I think the Bears' defense looks like it's starting to come together. Again, will it be enough to save Eberflus's job by the end of the year? Probably not. But good defenses by both teams in this one.
Yeah, I agree. And a great point about Montez Sweat, because you're right. They haven't had, you know, pressure on the quarterback in 2-3 seasons now. So if you're all of a sudden seeing it, it's logical to assume that Sweat is a huge part of that. We'll keep an eye on that moving forward. All right, in other news, the Carolina Panthers needed all of 11 games to decide that Frank Reich was, in fact, not the guy to be coaching their team. Ronan, I'm going to let you go first, and then me and you are just going to leave, and Simon is going to talk about Frank Reich for the rest of the podcast. But you get first dibs, and then we'll let Simon do his thing.
Yeah, truthfully, Ben, it's not necessarily much of a surprise, right? The Panthers, it's no question that they've struggled this year. It just does not seem like Reich and Bryce Young clicked. It doesn't seem like Young is comfortable with where he's at in Carolina so far this season. And, you know, whenever you have a young quarterback, yes, it will. The saying is, if you give your quarterback too many offensive coordinators, it'll mess them up. But you got to find the right one. And if it doesn't work with the first one, you got to keep trying to find it. I'm not entirely sure if they've also given the axe to the OC as well, but I would assume some changes are being made in terms of play calling. But Reich, it didn't work out in Indianapolis. It was kind of a sour ending. He was given the axe, I believe, halfway through last year as well. So this was one of those, I can't quite remember my stance on the hiring as soon as it happened, but I don't think I was the biggest of fans just because of how, it ended in Indianapolis and how, you know, he wanted this veteran quarterback that needed the help and, or that, you know, didn't need his help all that much, but he can still, you know, be a peer instead of a mentor. And then, you know, the narrative kind of flipped and it was like, oh, well, Reich never had a young quarterback, so let's go ahead and give him a young quarterback. And then, you know, now we're here and the first year of Bryce Young's career is pretty much a wash. Hopefully we can see some kind of spur here at the end of the season, but it's not much of a surprise, Ben.
Yeah, and listen, we've seen more and more over the past few years general managers getting shorter leashes and head coaches getting shorter leashes. Simon, I'm going to unleash you, man, because I know you are loaded over there, and you and I haven't talked. You haven't told me your feelings on this yet. We haven't talked about it at all. I think I'm going to agree with a lot with that you're going to say, so I'm just going to kind of let you lay it out, and then we'll see where we stack at it. But go ahead and have at it, man.
David Tepper, the majority owner of the Carolina Panthers, is an absolute joke of an owner right now, guys. An absolute, like, just debauchery of being an owner of an NFL franchise. I do not understand what the expectations were when we're hearing from that. This is a quote from Ian Rappaport, who was all over the story today of NFL Network. Quote, a large portion of this, this part's paraphrasing, a large portion of the firing and a lot of the issue wasn't just like the wins and the play calling and the game management stuff. It was, quote, a lack of development from quarterback Bryce Young compared to the development of quarterback CJ Stroud, end quote. What development do you get in 11 games? What development do you get in one season? What development? When you draft a rookie quarterback, you get the rookie quarterback that he is, and the development comes over a year, 2 years, 3 years. You don't like the fact that you picked the wrong quarterback? That's fine. Maybe you as the owner shouldn't dictate who your team goes and drafts. Maybe you as the owner shouldn't turn on SEC Network one Saturday and decide who your franchise quarterback is going to be. Maybe you as the owner should hire football people and then say, you guys now go pick who the quarterback is, instead of deciding who your quarterback is and then hiring the people after that. So that's step one. Step two, Tom Pelissero, along with Ian Rappaport, were reporting that Reich was out, and they talked about all the moves that came after that. This is, to Ronan's point, what other fallout is there with the coaching staff? So special teams coordinator Chris Tabor becomes the interim. He's been an interim in the past, ironically, with the Bears. Offensive assistant Jim Caldwell, long fame, long well-respected Jim Caldwell, who's been an offensive assistant, quote, moves up the ranks of the organization, end quote. Statement from David Tepper that he released through the Panthers social media account this morning. Quote, senior assistant Jim Caldwell will be a special advisor to offensive coordinator Thomas Brown, who will take over play calling duties, end quote. Together, right? So about an hour after the Reich news hits, we get notification from Rappaport that quarterback coach Josh McCown and running back coach / assistant head coach Deuce Staley have also been fired. And that decision was made by special teams coordinator and now interim head coach Chris Tabor and Jim Caldwell. So within an hour of Tabor and Caldwell being named the interim coach and moving up the ranks, whatever that is, they're like, hey, you know what? Let's get these other two suckers up out of here and create – like, is Jim Caldwell just sitting back at like near 70 years old making a power play to be the head coach or OC for this team next year? What is going on? You fire your quarterback coach and you fire who's Josh McCown, who's been this like a mythical creature when it comes to head coaching interviews for the last 3 years. And you fire this guy, Deuce Staley, who like everybody around the league is just waiting for him to get his opportunity. And did Tabor like see what happened to Steve Wilks last year as the interim coach and was like, man, I better collect as much power as I can right now and try to maybe get myself a chance at this job? What? This is a joke, man. What are you doing? You promote, like, at this point, I have to imagine that Tabor and Caldwell are like in Tepper's office in week six talking about like, you know what I would do if I were you. Is this what happens when you assemble this like superstar cast of coaching? Remember when this offseason when we were talking about it and it was Reich and it was Thomas Brown and Caldwell was around and you got McCown and then you got Ejiro Evero coaching defense. And by the way, Evero's just sitting over there in his defensive meeting room. He's like, I ain't going to say nothing. I'm just going to hang out over here. I really hope someone pays Brian Burns and I can just sit here quietly and try and develop a good defense out of this crap hole that's going on right now. I do not understand anything that's happening here with any of these people. And from top down, this organization to the guys that are now currently coaching this team, if you're a player here and you're seeing your coaches like all turn on each other and all like freak out and have no idea what's going on. And by the way, this quote from Tepper about Thomas Brown will take over the play calling duties clearly sets up as he's the fall guy when this offense doesn't get better, right? So that way they can't blame Bryce Young. They can't blame Jim Caldwell if that's what he's trying to make happen. It's just all it's all insane. So here's more about David Tepper. I have more, guys. I have more. This is per from Shil Kapadia of The Ringer. The Panthers have gone 30-63, second worst record in the NFL, since 2018 when Tepper took over the team. They've had zero winning seasons, zero playoff appearances, and six different head coaches, including the interim coaches. Remember, they just fired Matt Rhule last year midseason. They have like $60 million going out to coaches right now that don't coach for them. And lastly, here's been their quarterback plan since Tepper has taken over the team. 2018 and 2019, they have Cam Newton and Kyle Allen when Cam was hurt in 2019. In 2020, they gave Teddy Bridgewater a three-year $63 million contract. How'd that go? Well, they traded him after the year. 2021, they bring in Sam Darnold. That's a great move. You love doing that. And then when that stopped working and he kind of got hurt, but also just kind of got benched, they signed Cam Newton back midseason to save the franchise again. 2022, they do the Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, PJ Walker timeshare, you know, because that's where we all want to go on vacation. And then 2023, they trade the farm, three first-round picks, DJ Moore, a couple other picks, and they go get a historical outlier of a quarterback in terms of size. What in the, and I apologize, hell is happening here, man? This is miserable. This is absolutely miserable. The only reason that this apparently, and I feel for Reich, I know I just talked about it, I don't actually feel bad for coaches, but like, dude, to go from Ursay to this guy and have the most unrealistic expectations for what it looks like to put a football team together. You talk about all those quarterbacks, that carousel that Reich had to deal with, partially his fault with the whole Carson Wentz thing at times. But and then to come here and now, yes, behind, I was expecting to hear a leak at some point today that was like Reich was actually the guy that suggested that they draft Bryce Young. But you can't really do that because then you're alienating Bryce Young and you can't really come back from that at that point. But like all indications are, and it's pretty common knowledge at this point, that it was not Reich that picked Bryce Young. So at this point, what are you hoping to do? You're hoping to bring in some other coach or coordinator and change everything that's happened. Unless they have a medieval stretcher to make the guy 6'1", you're not going to fix anything. I'm sorry. This is who he is. You have to build the offense that works around it. And I know it didn't look great. Obviously, the record speaks for itself. The stats speak for itself. But like a spread offense where Young just reads the defense and has to make quick decisions, like that's the right offense for him right now. I don't know what else you're – did Frank Reich go and pay Miles Sanders $7 million a season this offseason? Maybe he did. I don't think he did, but maybe he did. Maybe he was the guy that said, if we get Miles Sanders, we'll be good. Was he the guy that said, let's get Jonathan Mingo with our second round pick and spend $6 million a year on Hayden Hurst, whatever it was? Maybe. I don't know. Did he say, let's get Brady Christensen hurt in the first week of the season and Austin Corbett will start the year on PUP and miss the first five games? I don't think he did that either. I don't understand anything that's happening here, and the Panthers look to be in a miserable spot for years to come. That is my rant, Ben.
Man, I don't know whether to applaud or give you a microphone so you can drop it. I don't know, but that, yeah, there's really nothing else to say, man. I suspected that this is where you were going, and I'm all in with you. Like, I live, two and a half hours from Carolina Panthers Nation, and there's nothing else to say about it. It's been a joke. Like, we were all pretty excited when Tepper came on board, because even though Richardson, as owner, had done a pretty good job, he had done enough crappy things that he just needed to go, and it was time to get a fresh face in. So here's Tepper, and it's been awful. It's been just unstable. It's been ridiculous. It's been fluid. You mentioned the coaches, the quarterbacks. It's been a joke. Nothing has been stable. There's no building. There's no growing. There's no nothing. It's like, hey, let's just keep throwing stuff on the wall and see what sticks. If that doesn't work, let's try something else. Let's just keep switching things out. And listen, we would all of us would love to have C.J. Stroud, or a quarterback like that, just catching fire right off the bat. Or we would like to have, Mike McDaniel coaching for us and just catch fire right off the bat. That's not most leagues, and that's not most teams, and that's not most players and coaches. You got to build something. And this idea of just turning it over, turn it over, turn it over until we find something that catches fire, you know, good luck with that. That really just doesn't usually work out too well. So, listen, the Panthers looked awful this year. They haven't gotten blown out of every game, but there haven't been many games where you thought, you know what, they got a chance to win this one. They've looked terrible. There's no question about it. The offense has looked bad. The defense has been up and down and up and down. It has been really bad. But still, I believe if you're going to hire a guy, you give him time to see what he can do. You give him at least two seasons, if not the three. And I think they should have given Frank Reich the full three seasons. And, you know, I would have drafted C.J. Stroud, but you got Bryce Young. You don't have Stroud. So you got Bryce Young. You work with that. But we all knew, we said it in the offseason, there's not a lot of talent on that offense for Bryce Young to work with. But there's enough to where he's not going to get destroyed each week. And he hasn't. He hasn't gotten destroyed each week. He just hasn't looked good. And the next offseason, you roll that over and you start adding to it. And, you know, it's just ridiculous that they think, Tepper thinks, and Tepper, and I don't know if anybody else has given him advice or if it's just him, Tepper, whoever's with him, think that they can just keep switching parts out and eventually something's going to magically happen. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, the next guy in is going to want to tear it apart and rebuild it. You just get this horrible cycle of, we're going to rebuild it the right way. Well, guess what? You're just tearing things down again. And it's an awful cycle. And, man, I don't know what else to say, Simon. Like, it's a joke. Simon?
And you know, I'm looking back at, like, some of their scores and the way the season went. And this is a particularly frustrating stretch. I get it because, you know, they lose the first six games, but they're mostly scoring like in the high teens into the 20s, right? And then they have their bye week. So you're like, okay, maybe it'll turn around. They beat the Texans out of their bye week, right? 15-13. That has to feel pretty good. You beat CJ Stroud. And then five straight losses. You don't get more than 13 points in those games, or four straight losses. You don't get more than 13 points in those games. And I get it. I get it. Like, that's hard to watch. But you have to have already recalibrated your brain when you're 0-6 going into your bye and then 1-6 going into that stretch of four games to what this team is. And if this team is a one-win team through 8 weeks of the season, these four losses can't completely change your whatever three-year, five-year plan you're on. So I get it. I understand the frustration, but this isn't, like you said, Ben, like when you've already done this a bunch of times, right? Definition of insanity, that whole thing. Maybe firing this guy midseason also isn't going to fix it. And the only other thing I could point to why this might feel right is the whole like going back and forth with the play calling and stuff. But like, A, wouldn't you want to see your coach like at least trying different things and trying you talk about you want the development of the quarterback? Hey, well, let's see if it'll go better if my OC does it. Oh, it didn't really go any better. Okay, let me take it back because that's what, you know, we were starting off with, and let me have a hand in this. And man, I don't know. It's a bummer. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
But you know,
it is.
Don't send honestly, Ben Johnson there. Don't do it. Just don't do it to him.
Honestly, I wanted them to keep Steve Wilks last year. If they weren't going to do that, I wanted them to pull in Eric Bieniemy and give him a shot at this thing and just give him three seasons with the young quarterback and see what he could do. Now it's a mess. You've got somebody's going to go there, but you've got fewer and fewer people that are going to want to go there. You know, the big names aren't going to want to go there. The enviable names, the Ben Johnsons, I don't think are going to want to go there, to be honest. I think they're going to get better offers in other places, or maybe just stay in Detroit until you get the offer you want for Ben Johnson. I don't think you want to go to the madhouse that is currently the Carolina Panthers, because it just hasn't stopped. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. You know, it's been ugly. Ronan, anything else here on the Panthers?
Just what they need to do, truthfully, in my opinion, this offseason is go and try to get a coach that can create a culture in Carolina, because they haven't had one. I remember the keep pounding days, right? And that was kind of like a culture where, you know, I don't know. They had some sort of aura around them. And right now, it's just a lot of question marks. It's a lot of gray. It's a lot of uncertainty. And I think if they're able to create some sort of culture, and I know that's corny, but I mean, you look around, that Detroit did it. You know, they went through the hard times. and they kind of made it a badge on their chest, and now they wear it, and they might wear it all the way to the playoffs. So I think, I don't know, you know, in the coaching pool, who kind of fits that mold. But I think, you know, if it's not, you know, one of the free agent coaches, if that's even a term, you know, maybe looking inside and, you know, maybe going with a guy like Avero, if he even wants that role at some point, but just someone who the guys can get behind, the entire organization can get behind, and that can lead them out of this, you know, kind of rut that they're in. But that's going to be tough whenever, Simon, like you've mentioned, there's a owner like Tepper who seems not the easiest to deal with and kind of hot and cold. And, you know, you look at the track history or, you know, the past couple of head coaches, and it doesn't look too good, Ben.
No, it doesn't. That's another thing I don't like, is this, what this feels like, an emotional reaction. I mean, in all reality, Simon mentioned it, rookie quarterback development, Stroud was hitting it out of the gate. I don't know how much development there really was. There really isn't any. Stroud was just hitting it right out of the chute from week one. He just had it. Anthony Richardson was showing some of the same thing before he went down. He just had it. Shane Steichen was helping him out, but still, he just had it. Some people take longer. You know, maybe Bryce Young never gets there. Maybe he just needs longer. It just feels like an emotional reaction, like, hey, we're going to blame Frank Reich for this. Didn't like that at all. Didn't like it in any way. There's nothing that happened in 11 games that really should change your mind from what you thought about Frank Reich during the offseason. You could have had Sean Payton. You didn't do it. If you had made a hard enough run, you could have. You could have gone after Eric Bieniemy. They didn't do that. You could have made a run at Shane Steichen. I don't know how hard a run they made at him, but they didn't feel, you know, didn't seem to be a very large push there. If Frank Reich was your guy, give him the time. Give him 2 seasons, you know, then fire him, you know, if you don't like him after 2 years. But anyway, this just feels like emotional reaction, and I think that's more of what they're going to get until Tepper decides, hey, I'm going to take myself out of this equation and let my people do my job. Simon, anything else here on this?
So much more. I could keep going for hours, but we won't do that to the listeners. Just know, don't like it. I'm sure more will come when we get into coaching predictions and stuff like that.
We've got more news and more injuries, and we'll get to it right after this break.
Hello, everybody. Brandon Tim here, telling you all to listen to the Fantasy Football Franchise, a podcast giving you the insights to help you win your fantasy football leagues. Together, we will look at everything fantasy football, from the platforms we use to navigating weekly player projections. Listen to the Fantasy Football Franchise, a Box Score Network podcast. We'll see you at the next episode.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast, presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports, ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes. And that's tricky with two I's.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. And we do encourage you to listen to all of our sister podcasts. There's a ton of football content out there. A lot of people working hard to bring it to you, both to entertain and to inform. So more news. Linebacker Shaq Leonard waived by the Colts. Cornerback Marcus Peters waived by the Raiders. Ronan, you pick one out, talk about it, and let Simon hit whatever he wants to hit.
Yeah, my guy Shaq Leonard, cut by the Colts. He hasn't been on the field a whole lot this year. He's been dealing with injuries the past couple of years, so you know, maybe he's just kind of been banged up. You know, something to keep an eye on, though. He's, when healthy, a very good linebacker. We haven't, again, seen a whole lot of that this year, but we know that it's in there somewhere. And, I mean, you put him in the right situation, you know, maybe get his conditioning up a little bit, because we haven't seen him a ton. Maybe a nice little linebacker for a playoff team. Simon?
Yeah, Ronan, and you know, you had the perfect team for him in the Eagles. It feels like he's going to be an Eagle. I know he's meeting with the Cowboys this week, which makes sense. Leighton Van Der Esch doesn't seem like he's going to come back from that neck injury we talked about a handful of weeks ago. They could use some defensive reinforcement. I would love to see the Buffalo Bills give them a call and try to get in on that. They could use a little bit of help. That second linebacker spot next to Terrell Bernard just really has not really solidified, but their issues might run deeper than personnel. Cause look, Shaq Leonard, when he does pick a team and get there and learn the defense and get up to the right conditioning, like Rowan's talking about, it's not going to be the guy from 3 years ago. It's not going to be the defensive player of the year candidate. It's not going to be the guy making the interceptions and the diving tackles and all this stuff, but it's going to be a nice piece. And I think that's why, yeah, like Ronan, I'm stepping on his point, but I'll make it for him. Why the Eagles are going to be perfect, because they don't need him to be a star, but he'll be an upgrade over what they've got in certain capacities. And with everything else insulating that position and that defense, I mean, it makes perfect sense. So it'll be cool to see wherever he ends up. I'll hit the. Oh, Ben, did you want to get in on Shaq Leonard, or do you want me to go ahead and hit the next one?
Yeah, go ahead and take it, man.
Now, Marcus Peters, waived by the Raiders, similar to Shaq Leonard, kind of a guy that just had obviously not there as long. This was his first year with the Raiders, but as the year went along, just kind of getting benched. The Raiders have had some late round draft picks, some unknown guys really take a lot of the snaps and kind of take the team by storm here, and new coaching staff and new direction for the team, and Peter's kind of on the outside looking in, so he gets waived. I don't think he will have a particularly big impact wherever he goes, but this cornerback and depth and getting close to the playoffs, like a good team should pick this guy up just because of his experience, because of his toughness. He still has some big play capabilities. He has a pick six this year, I think. This isn't I'll bring up Buffalo again. This isn't a Buffalo make him your corner two and roll into the playoffs. This is very much a good team that maybe doesn't love their depth, doesn't love their fifth corner, struggles in going in dime, something like that. Don't rely on be a starter, but a good team should be going for Marcus Peters, just like they should be going for Shaq Leonard. Ben?
Yeah, I would go after either one of these guys in a heartbeat for two different reasons. You've kind of hit both of them. Number one, if I've got a position group that's been ravaged by injuries, I need to pull a guy in here just to help me get through. Both of these guys have experience. It's clear their best days are behind them, but both guys have experience. But then for next season, if I think, hey, I can pull a guy in for part of this season, he likes it, and I can catch him cheap for next year on a one-year deal or even a two-year deal, just cheap, I kind of feel like I'm buying a lottery ticket. No different than Colts GM Ballard, who likes to have a lot of draft picks. He kind of feels like he's just getting more shots at it. That's how I've always felt with a lot of these veterans here, because you're right, they're not going to return to all pro form. But if I get a guy who plays 500 snaps and he's just got a key role and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes, I've kind of hit the lottery there at 1 year, $3 million, or whatever I have to pay the guy. So, you know, I love doing that for two different reasons, and we'll see who gets these two guys. Injury list. I'm going to list them all. Simon, I'll give you first shot at it and then roll it over to Ronan's side of the house. Brian's quarterback. Brown's quarterback, Dorian Thompson Robinson, out probably a week. Saints wide receiver Chris Olave, concussion, probably out for a week. Dolphins edge Jalen Phillips looks like Achilles, out for the season is what we're projecting here. And then Jaguars offensive tackle Cam Robinson with a knee, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'll start with the Jags and the offensive. Actually, no, I'm going to start with the Dolphins. This feels like the biggest one, obviously. Jalen Phillips, edge rusher for the Dolphins. We talked about, I think just last week, this Dolphins defense felt like it was really starting to come on, getting Jalen Ramsey in and healthy, and Xavier Howard and is there, and Javon Holland is playing and still healthy, and just everything felt like it was clicking for this defense. And Jalen Phillips was having a really nice season, and I don't think we've still gotten any official word on it yet, but even just the video alone, but Phillips and McDaniels, what they've said since the injury occurred, looks like it's a torn Achilles for Jalen Phillips. It's going to be out for the season. And this is such a bummer, because this offense, while it's been struggling the last couple of weeks, kind of coming back down to earth, the defense was meeting them up more in that upper upper third ish, you know, definitely top half of the league in defense kind of realm. So really try to hope this team get ready for winter football, get ready for playoff football. And, you know, they signed Jason Pierre-Paul off the Saints practice squad to try and get a little bit of depth there. Jalen Phillips was really kind of the juice on one side as an edge rusher. Bradley Chubb is on the other side, but he's not the same kind of speed and get into the backfield and do all those things that Phillips was doing. So this is a bummer. Dolphins defense still feels like it's going to win, kind of going back to front and have those good down interior defensive linemen. Really trying to wreak havoc up the middle and then see what, you know, Chubb and other guys can kind of clean up off the edge. So there's still a realm for this Dolphins defense, but this feels like it could be a pretty significant hit for a team that was going to try and make a leap to the upper echelon of the league, Ben.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that because I love that Dolphins front four. It's a really good front four, and Phillips was an integral part of it. So, Ronan, what do you want to talk about here on the injury side of things?
Yeah, I'll hit the Olave and DTR injuries. Saints wide receiver Chris Olave most likely out next week with a concussion. He's been obviously their top target so far this year. So, you know, going to have to rely on the I love nicknames, but I don't mean to be mean about this one, but Slant Boy, Michael Thomas, Juwan Johnson, Alvin Kamara. Going to have to rely on some other guys. That Saints offense has been struggling so far this year. Derek Carr has not necessarily gotten too comfortable, it seems. He's gotten injured here and there. And you know Derek Carr, he's going to be playing through just about anything that he's able to. So I'm sure in week three he's dealing something that we'll find out in like a year from now. And then speaking of injured quarterbacks, Dorian Thompson-Robinson was injured in the loss to the Broncos this past week, out with a concussion most likely this coming week. Got to keep him healthy. Don't want – after last year with Tua, you cannot send your quarterback or just player out there after suffering a concussion. You got to be sure that they're healed. Looks like P.J. Walker will probably be getting the start next week. And, you know, hopefully we can see them both back out there on the field soon, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. And not quite as big of injuries this week to talk about as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, but still thankfully, big for the Dolphins. The Jaguars offensive tackle Cam Robinson, of course, we mentioned that he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. Kind of a tough hit for the Jaguars here. Now, they've got a little bit, not a lot, they've got a little bit of breathing room with that win over the Texans on Sunday, because had they lost that game, they would be back there in the muck and the mire of that division. Instead, they're kind of out front. So, Simon, I kind of feel like they can kind of weather this, having got that little bit of breathing space over the Texans.
Yeah, and that, you know, talk about some breathing room and giving yourself some room for error. The Jaguars have, and I know I've harped on this, but really made it a priority to have some depth on that offensive line. Remember, they traded for Ezra Cleveland at the trade deadline, and he was the one that came in when Cam Robinson went down. They shifted Walker Little back over to left tackle. Cleveland gets his first real action of the season for the Jaguars coming in at left guard, and it seems like that'll be, you know, he'll be there to stay to help stabilize that thing. So, you create some breathing room for kind of trying to work with your offensive line. We'll talk about the Jags and their season and that game against the Texans later, but it's going to be a big, big help. I do want to backtrack for a quick minute here on the Cleveland Browns. Are we sure it's going to be P.J. Walker and not one Joe Flacco?
Oh, no. No, we're not sure. And after P.J.'s, it's not like Walker was necessarily blowing the Broncos' doors off. So, I mean, you never know. I mean, he was 6 of 13, 56 yards. He was sacked four times. So, yeah, you know what? That's a good call. That very well could be Joe Flacco.
It's going to be so interesting. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. We're going to get Joe Flacco in 2023 playing for the Cleveland Browns. Who do they play next week? Does anybody know off top?
They play the Los Angeles Rams.
Oh, Ronan. I'm real excited for you. I'm real excited.
Hey, you know what? That fits the Rams to the playoffs or the Vikings narrative. So I'm all for it.
All comes full circle. Ben, get us back on track. Now I'm just thinking about watching Joe Flacco play for the Cleveland Browns, and I'm all over the place.
All right, let's hit some more games. Ravens beat the Chargers 20-10. Chargers continue to slide. They're at 4-7. Ravens, even without Mark Andrews, continue to win. They're at 9-3. Simon, going to start it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have some good stuff to say about the Chargers that is not of the norm for them this season. I'll get to that later. As always, we're going to start with the bad. Chargers just continue to beat themselves. You know, three real turnovers in this one. They had the fourth on the Hail Mary to end the first half. But one of those was the key Justin Herbert fumble at the end of a 19-play drive in the red zone. And we mentioned him at the beginning of the season and all through the offseason, Ben. Trey Pipkins over there at right tackle just completely got the doors blown off by Jadeveon Clowney, which he had really all game. And, you know, we got to put some on Herbert. I'm obviously willing to do that. Like, can't fumble the ball there, man. Can't fumble the ball there. But this offense just continuing to struggle in the key moments, and the team as a whole does the same. But this Ravens defense is so good at getting pressure. It's just insane how well they do it, because they do it from all over the place. They do it so quickly, and they recover so quickly on the back end. So whether they're sending the nickel, whether they're sending the linebacker, whoever they're sending on the blitz, it feels like they're not losing anything in coverage. Normally, and you can really see it really well on the TV tape, right? When the slot corner is starting to cheat in and you know he's going to blitz, you're like, okay, boom, hot to that slot. Well, that safety or that weak side linebacker is already in that space, right? They're covering it up so fast. And this defense as a whole is so fast that no matter where you think you're going to go, like, it's not there. And whether that is they're creating a turnover off of that, like they did in this one, or they're just, you know, there to deflect the pass or quickly make the tackle. But this defense gets such good pressure so quickly without giving up any space anywhere. It really stands out just on the TV tape. So Chargers hurting themselves on offense, but the Ravens really put it on them defensively too, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. Ronan, thoughts on the game?
Simon, I think you hit it right there on the head. That Ravens defense, specifically the pass rush, 9 QB hits, 3 sacks. Marlon Humphrey didn't even play tonight. He didn't even play against the Chargers. So, you know, think about, you know, whenever Humphrey is back, if they can bring in someone like Marcus Peters, right, who has been there before, you know, to kind of help, because Humphrey has been kind of banged up. That Ravens defense is scary. And, you know, they just lost Mark Andrews. So time will tell with how this offense will function post-Andrews this season. But that defense will keep them in games all season long. On the opposite side, guys, this Chargers offense, aside from Keenan Allen, who had 14 receptions on 16 targets for 106 yards, it's pretty lackluster. And I feel like every time we watch a Chargers game and we hop on here, I always end up saying that they need some sort of second option. They need some sort of yang to the yin. You know, Mike Williams was that kind of that player, but even then, very similar to Keenan Allen, they just don't have anyone to stretch the field. I apologize to keep saying it over and over again, but I don't know. This Chargers offense is just one-dimensional. Simon?
If only there had been a wide receiver in the draft that was, you know, really speedy, really jittery, a really good downfield target, can play on the outside, can play in the slot. Someone like a Zay Flowers, like the Ravens had in this one, because he was – oh, wait. Did the Chargers pass on Zay Flowers to take Quentin Johnson, who I think had 2 drops in this game?
I think you might be correct.
Real tough. That's a huge bummer.
Yeah, no, we're not going to forget that. Come 3 or 4 years from now, this podcast is not going to forget that we told the Chargers what to do in more than one way, but specifically the wide receiver. I'm going to go back real quick to that Ravens defense, Simon, because you mentioned how good they are. One of my favorite things is how many different players they're using and using well. All defenses rotate, but the Ravens seem to be rotating 16, 17 guys that are all playing important parts and all playing it very well. I mean, and it's quite a collection too. You've got Matabuke. You've got Kyle Hamilton, the CB, the slot CB who plays safety. They just kind of use him all over the place. They blitz him some. They've got those two linebackers that we love, Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen. You mentioned Marlon Humphrey wasn't in that game. They got Brandon Stevens back there. Arthur Millette, who's a CB that came over from the Jets a year or two ago. I mean, it's Ronald Darby's back there. It's quite a collection of guys. And we see a lot of defenses do that, but none of them are doing it as well as the Ravens are mixing all these guys together. It's just quite a blend. And Ojabo's not even playing much this year. I think he went down again with another basically season-ending injury, or maybe he'll come back at the end. He's not even playing. It's quite a group there, and they're all playing very effectively. When you roll over to PFF, most of their grades are very good, very consistent, or high level. When you watch them on the field, they pass the eye test. They're doing a lot of things well. When you look at them statistically as a group, say on any of the advanced analytics groups, they look good on the analytics side. There's really, and it's hard to point to like you can with the Cowboys or the 49ers, but boy, all these guys just coming in, playing roles, being asked to do different things. They're all doing it well. So that's what really stands out to me, Simon, is kind of this mix here that the Ravens are doing. We saw the start of it last year, but it didn't quite kick in the way it has this year. This year has really seemed to catch fire. It's been very impressive, Simon.
Yeah, the change to Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator last year, we saw all those miscommunications in the back end early on the season. They really came on by the end of the year, especially when they traded for Roquan Smith. And this year, they've just been gangbusters since the start. You mentioned guys just like showing up and rotating and popping. Tavius Robinson, the fourth round rookie edge rusher, has started to pop on tape the last couple of weeks. And he's not even the young edge rusher that's supposed to be doing it, right? You mentioned Ojabo, and here's another one that, 6'6", 260 pounds, just on the edge, make a plays, no big deal. I want to show a little love to the Chargers because they were great on the defensive end of the football in this one, which was extremely surprising. It's been a bottom five defense all year. I had tweeted out that it was like the defense knew that if they didn't have a good game, Coach Staley was going to be out of there Monday morning, because they were really good. They held the Ravens to 4-13 on third down, which is just 30% conversion. The Ravens have been about 45% all year, which is a top five team on third down. Baltimore was 1 of 5 on third and long situations, just 3 of 8 on third and shorts. They're also sub 200 yards through the air, which had only happened 4 times all season for them. The last time was October 29th. So they've really been rolling this month. The other 3 times were in the first 4 weeks of the season. So the Ravens have been consistently really productive through the air, and the Chargers were really good at preventing that. And part of that was the Chargers' pressure. They were consistently in the backfield and collapsing the pocket. Lamar did a great job all game of kind of pinballing his way through the pocket and finding some open spaces, trying to make some plays. But even with that, the defense backs were, held to their assignments really well. So I thought the Chargers defense was really strong overall in this one. I mean, they held the Ravens to 20 points, even with all the turnovers, kept them pretty inefficient throughout the game. So I don't know, similarly to Eberflus and the Bears, I don't know if this is if the Chargers can string a couple good defensive performances if it keeps Staley's job, because there's a lot of other stuff going on with Staley, obviously. But it was nice to see this Chargers defense kind of show a little bit of what we thought they might be going into the season, Ben.
Yeah, and it's been disappointing, and that without Bosa, right? So I think he's coming. Is he still possibly coming back in a couple of weeks? Last I heard,
yeah, still on. I think this was his first week on IR. He's having Raisin Bran up in the box at Chargers game. So that's the latest update I have for you on Bosa.
Yeah, and I apologize to put you on the spot, but that's the last I've heard is that he's still got a chance, but we'll see if he actually
on the spot. I thought Raisin Bran was a pretty good update. I mean, I had you down as a cereal. So yeah,
I appreciate it. Ronnie, real quick, I'm going to ask you, and then we're going to move to the Eagles and Bills. If you had to pick between the Ravens right now and the Chiefs to make it out of the AFC, who would you like? There's a lot of football between now and, you know, playoff time, so anything could happen from injuries to teams getting hot. But just which team would you like better right now between those two?
Ben, I'm going to have to go with the Chiefs. I need to see what this Ravens offense can do post Mark Andrews. You know, he's been Lamar's top target pretty much since Lamar's entered the league. So, you know, how this offense looks without him is going to be very important. And, you know, 20 points against, like you guys mentioned, a bottom five defense is not a great start for this post Mark Andrews kind of saga for the Ravens this year.
Yeah, fair enough, because I love the Ravens, but going up against that Chiefs secondary and Chris Jones without Mark Andrews would be a tall task. All right, Eagles beat the Bills 37-34. And really, if you'd asked us during the offseason what a kind of game we would have expected, but the Bills have kind of limped their way through most of this season. Didn't limp through this game. They had every right to think they could win it at a lot of points during this game. Eagles actually come from behind and win it. Simon, get us started.
Yeah, I mean, the best place to start is at the end, and the Bills lost this game when they decided to use a timeout to try and ice Jake Elliott on a 59-yard field goal in the rain, and then kneeled down with 20 seconds left instead of trying to go for it with Josh Allen, who was playing like an MVP again in this one. You know, that was the moment they lost. When they did that, I was kind of like, okay, this you're telling me you're playing essentially to not lose, and you can't do that against this Eagles team, who I think this is what, their fourth straight game winning after losing or being behind at halftime, right? That's such a tough call for the Bills, man. I mean, it continues the streak of Sean McDermott having some weird game management and weird defensive play calls, right? We saw the Eagles last drive in regulation and in overtime where it was some real soft zone and then some weird blitzes at weird times. And it got me thinking, like, do we remember when the last time Sean McDermott was calling defensive plays, right? That was such a big talking point going into the season. He was taking over for Leslie Frazier. Did he do it early in the Buffalo days, or had he not done it since he was literally DC in Carolina? I don't know, but like we have a very good sample size now of, and listen, I know we've talked about it endlessly, the Bills injuries on defense, and that's tough, but it feels like they would just be covering up some of this weird stuff that's going on. And I don't know how much of it is in response to the injuries, but still, just been a couple weeks of some weird defensive stuff happening for McDermott, as well as the game management side of it. Ben,
Rona, what you got, man?
Jalen Hurts. We've been, Simon and I talked about on the Simon Short podcast about, you know, the no quarterback has really emerged in the MVP conversation, and a 5 in total touchdown performance by Jalen Hurts is a good way to kind of kick the door down and enter into the room of the MVP conversation, because Hurts 18 of 31 for 200, 3 touchdowns and a pick passing, and then 14 attempts, 65 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. So 5 in total. He scored what, some fast math, 30 of the 37, something like that. I mean, whenever it's a heavyweight matchup against the Buffalo Bills, again, Simon and I were talking about, we need to see these big performances at the end of the season or this final stretch, and an overtime win against the Bills, just nasty out. This is a good start for Jalen Hurts if he wants to kind of make his way through the MVP conversation, because right now, Ben, it's anybody's race.
Yeah, it is. We don't usually see MVP this wide open this late in the season. Usually it's two or three guys with one guy kind of out in the lead. So you're right there. Josh Allen, you both kind of mentioned that he had a heck of a game. 339 on the yardage, two touchdowns. He ran nine times for 81 yards, two touchdowns himself. So he had four touchdowns. I mean, it was he had the one ugly pick, but it was a heck of a game for Josh Allen. And yet still the Bills lose. I mean, we kind of see them lose several different ways this year. Sometimes it's they win ugly close, like the 14-9 against the Giants, I think it was, earlier in the season. And then other games they lose, they were ahead and lost. Sometimes they're behind and lost. Here, it was a fantastic game. I don't blame them for losing this game against the Eagles on the road, but still, I mean, the Bills just can't seem to get out of their own way. So, Simon, I'm going to ask you, we'll get back into the game in a second, but what's your feeling on the Bills for the next few weeks? Are you encouraged by what you saw in Philadelphia, or are you discouraged that they are 6-6 and lost again?
Yeah, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. I think other than, yeah, some of those calls for the game by McDermott, both defensively and from a game management standpoint, I mean, they lost to what I think is the best team in the NFL right now by 3 points in overtime. And they were very good offensively, like we expect them to be. Josh Allen looks like he's back to Josh Allen mode, right? So his little reign of terror has come to an end, we think, knock on wood. Let's see. But they have such a tough stretch of games coming up, man. I mean, they've got the Chiefs, the Cowboys, before playing the Chargers and Patriots, and then finishing out with the Dolphins. So it is such a tough road for them, but I am encouraged. It feels like a case of, like, I think they're back to being them, but it might be too little too late being 500 with the stretch of games coming up. You really wish you don't have that loss to the Patriots on the books, or that loss to the, I don't know, let's say the Jags or to the Bengals or the Broncos, obviously that one. But I feel like the Bills are back. They're kind of where we thought they would be at this point, just not with the record, Ben.
Yeah, I was more encouraged by what I saw in this game than I was discouraged. Although still, you're like, dang it, we kind of had this and we let them off the hook. Simon, anything else here on the game itself?
You know, just continue to track the difference in the Bills offense. They tried to run in this one. They gave it the good old college try. I slacked you guys in the first like 10 minutes of the game. It was like, they're running the ball, and it just never worked. I mean, James Cook didn't have a run go longer than 4 yards until the fourth quarter. He had two 11 yard runs until then. It was all twos and fours and threes and everything. 40 carries for 173 yards. That's a 4.3 average. And if it wasn't for Josh Allen, the running backs just had no space to run. And I think that's mostly, you know, credit to the Eagles. We've seen the Bills run effectively when they've run in the past. So I think this Eagles run D was just really good in this one. But kudos to them for trying. And then the Eagles, man, you just can't let them, you can't let them hang around. They can play ugly. You know, last year it was all the blowouts, and we've talked about this throughout the year, but they can win any game in any way. And you know, like I said, I think firmly best team in the NFL right now, Ben.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by BoxScore Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, let's move on to the other, what I thought was the other fun game of the day. Jaguars beat the Texans 24-21. Wasn't quite as much free-flowing back and forth, but in terms of storylines and the game being close and what all was at stake here, I thought it was still a fun game. Ronan, I'm going to let you get started here. Jaguars win this thing.
Yeah, they do, Ben. And, you know, still, though, C.J. Stroud, man, That kid is electric. I'm going to keep eating my words probably every week because we end up talking about CJ Stroud every week. 26 of 36 for 304 yards and two touchdowns. I'm sorry. We started off the show talking about, you know, Frank Reich and Bryce Young.
I'll say Frank Reich is fired because of you, Rona, because we keep bringing this up.
Yeah, it
David
might
Tepper's
be partially my
clued
fault.
Into the Stat Sheet podcast. It's like, man, those three guys keep telling me I did the wrong thing every week.
And for that, Mr. Tepper, I apologize. I was wrong. I just wanted to cheer on the underdog, even though the underdog came from Alabama and won a bunch of football games and so on and so forth. But
literally under the dog because he's so short.
That's just too far. That's hater. There's seeing it how it is and then hating. You know, he is short for sure. That's seeing it how it is. Under the dog, that's a tad bit hating.
At me, David Tepper. Go ahead.
At me, David Tepper. He's gonna agree with you with all of the he hasn't progressed like Stroud, so he's probably gonna be right there with you.
Listen, but if he wants to hire me for 8 weeks and give me a guaranteed contract to be really bad, I mean, like, talk about Frank Reich getting one win, I will get negative wins and I will take the guaranteed contract and all of the humiliation that goes along with it. So Tepper, my line's open. What were we talking about? Texans, Jags?
I don't know.
Texans, Jags,
we're talking
I
about
think.
The Panthers, man.
I got to stop talking about the Panthers.
I got him on a roll. But just to continue on the Texans side of things, Nico Collins is continuing to prove that he's a viable target in the Texans offense. 7 receptions, 104 yards, and a touchdown. They didn't get the win, right? But this is a Jacksonville Jaguars team that is sitting at the top of the AFC. Trevor Lawrence has looked very good so far this year. Maybe not, you know, MVP caliber, but he's obviously been doing enough to win the Jags games. They haven't necessarily ran the ball all that well, or at least they didn't against Houston. 30 attempts for 81 yards, that's 2.7 a clip. And that's with a 20-yard rush from Travis Etienne. So an abysmal great game on the ground for Jacksonville, but they're still able to squeak out the win, Ben.
This was a bit of an ugly game. I got to watch it live, every bit of it. It was a bit of an ugly, kind of a stilted game. And yet I was impressed that Jacksonville came away with a victory. It's not the first time they've had an impressive victory this year. But what I really want to see, and Simon, I'll let you talk about the game all you want. What I really want to see moving forward from Jacksonville is for them to take that next step, to actually show us that they're not just a cute, fun team, that they're a serious team. And I think there's a big difference. I think that's a big leap for NFL teams from being, hey, we're cute, fun, love us, we're playoffs every year, root for us, to, hey, no, we're a serious Super Bowl team. You look at them over the next few weeks, they've got the Bengals at home. They should win that. They're at the Browns, and while that won't be easy, they should win that. They've got the Ravens. That's a complete toss-up right there on Sunday night. And then they end with the Panthers and Titans. There's no reason right now that the Jaguars shouldn't finish out 4-1, which puts them at 12-4 or 13-4, wherever that puts them. I'm missing a game in there somewhere. They should have a heck of a record. They should basically be the 3 seed in the AFC. And so if they don't do that, I know the offensive line's doing some shuffling. They're still the better team in 4 of these games and got no reason to think they can't beat the Ravens at home. So I'm looking for them to actually show us that they are a for real team and take that next step. But so we'll see. They've been a little up and down. We'll see what they come up with. But that's what I'm looking for. Simon?
Yeah, I want to hit something to both of your points here, and I'll kick to Ronan for a minute. And that is, how can Jacksonville do that, right? How can they kind of help themselves in that sort of – we feel like we can be more consistent. We feel like we can be counted on more to pull these games out. And it is the run game that Rona mentioned. He mentioned it, just 81 yards in this one. It's their third lowest total of the season. And I do think it works fine for them. I mean, obviously they're 8-3 and you know, for them, they're two of their three losses, they ran less than 80 yards on the ground. So as long as they meet that 80 yard threshold, like they're obviously, you know, do the math there, 8-1, pretty good. And I do think for them, part of why it got so ugly in this one was they completely abandoned the run game, which doesn't work because they need to keep Etienne as involved in the game as possible. So whether or not he's running efficiently, right, he's not the – I mean, he's done pretty well through the tackles this year, but it's more about the explosive plays for him. So even if you have to do five ugly runs to get a 18-yard run from him, like that's what this offense needs, and that's what it kind of relies on in the run game. So I think, you know, them continuing to run the ball will be really helpful. And Ben mentioned the O-line injuries again. Like, that's part of it, right? When your offensive line is continuously shuffling, you have to change what you do in the run game because guys haven't practiced certain schemes, or your backup can't quite, your backup guard can't quite pull the way your starting guard does. So maybe you take away some of those run plays. So I think if they can get a little more consistent in their run game, they'll be better off, because you know they haven't really had any high yardage outputs in the run game. They've only had over 110 yards four different times, but I think that would go a long way towards what you're talking about, Ben. Ronan, what else do you have on this one?
Yeah, just talking about how real this Jaguars team, guys. In the past 13 games, they're 9-4, and those losses came against the Chiefs. This is back to the playoffs, right? The Chiefs in the playoffs, right, 20-27, only a touchdown loss. They lost to the Texans, right, where they dropped 37 points, which you can kind of point to and say, okay, that was a C.J. Stroud kind of statement game. Where else have they lost? They lost to the 49ers, 34-3, which was a pretty tough one. But the point is, they're losing to some pretty formidable teams, aside from the Texans, who have caught fire this year. So I think you can kind of justify that, you know, as we sit here now. They're going out there and they're looking good. Go back to that Chargers comeback. They were down quite a bit. I don't remember the exact score, but it was chalked. Everybody was, all right, Chargers win. And then all of a sudden they gritted out. So they've shown a lot in the past, you know, almost season long of games. And I'm starting to really buy into this Jaguars team. I just wanted to toss that out there, because these losses, it's not like they're, you know, to some, for lack of a better term, bum. It's against, you know, a pretty dang good team that, you know, going into the game, relatively a 50-50 shot. Two of the four losses coming against the Chiefs, one of which being a playoff loss. I don't know. Not too bad. Not too much to scoff at, Ben.
Yeah, I'm going to make one point, and then I'm going to kick it to Simon for final word on this game. The AFC South, you talk about fun for the next 3 or 4 years. Looks like it's going to be a fun division. We saw two of them here, probably the two best in the division, Trevor Lawrence and C.J. Stroud. I could imagine them, if they continue on their track, battling things out for years to come in a lot of these fun matchups. But you even have the Colts sitting there with Anthony Richardson. If he gets back healthy and gets to play with Steichen, boy, they could be doing some damage. And then, you know, jury's still out on Will Levis and the Titans, but the Titans aren't going anywhere. As long as they kind of keep on their track, the Titans are going to be tough every year too. This could be a very fun division. Lots of young quarterbacks, lots of competition coming out of this division. Simon.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the quarterbacks, and let's get to the passing game a little bit, because for the Jaguars, this was their best passing performance by far on the season. 364 yards. They hadn't eclipsed 300 yards through the air in total for a game so far this season. And a big part of it is Calvin Ridley, who I mentioned a few weeks ago as like, hey, they're still trying to feed him. It's going to happen at some point. In three of the last four games, Ridley has had at least 80 yards. And he only did that twice in their first seven games. So that connection is starting to hit. He has a couple touchdowns in these last couple games as well. So it feels like, okay, if we can't get that running game to be as consistent as we want it, this passing game, it feels like, is about to be unlocked. So that's going to be huge for them when it comes down to playing against those best teams, playing against the Chiefs, playing against whoever they might, Dolphins in the playoffs potentially kind of deal, right? So that's looking really good. We've talked about C.J. Stroud. Let me stick to my theme of the night here, and it's these defenses looked really good too. The Texans in particular, Their defense was incredible, sticky in pass coverage. They controlled the running lanes. They were good situationally. In the red zone, they were getting stops multiple times off of turnovers there, or not off turnovers, but in the red zone and on key downs. Will Anderson was really popping off the tape on first watch, and that was going against a pretty good right tackle in rookie Anton Harrison, as far as rookie tackles go. But D'Amico Ryans is really coaching up that defensive group really well. Jacksonville was solid on defense too. The corners did a good job of tackling right away. The front got good pressure on Stroud, who I think had like a time to throw of 3.8 seconds or something like that. In this one, he had to hold the ball a lot. He made a lot of plays. You know, Ronan mentioned Nico Collins. We saw Tank Dell make some plays, but they were getting Stroud kind of running around back there, doing stuff that he doesn't normally do. He's normally very on time. But it, for Jacksonville, man, it comes back down to getting those sacks, very similar to what we were talking about at the top with the Bears. The Jaguars also are a very poor team when it comes to converting pressures to tackles. Josh Allen really needs some help. You know, he's tied for third in the NFL with 12 sacks. On the year, Jacksonville is ninth in pressures and just 23rd in sacks, same as last year when they were third in pressures, 25th in sacks. They can get there, right? They're in the area. They're making life hard on the quarterback. They do this week in and week out. And if it weren't for Josh Allen's, what, I think he had like 2.5 sacks in this one. This could have been a very different game because those are some drive killers. One was on that last drive. Maybe two of them were on that last drive. Knocking them out of field goal range, which, by the way, but that Matt Amendola nearly made that 56-yarder to go into overtime. We had some good kicks this week, guys.
Yeah, we have. You mentioned that Eagles kick, the 59-yarder in the rain. Just an unbelievably clutch kick in the Bills game, and then the kick here as well that almost was. So nice win for the Jaguars. They finally get some breathing space. Looking for them to move up ahead. We'll see what they do over the next few weeks. All right, Ben's burning questions. I've got two of them tonight. One is the standard. What's your last word around the NFL? We'll get to that last. First of all, though, I want to know your top three offenses in the NFL this season. So we'll go to Simon, and then we'll go to Ronan. It doesn't necessarily have to be the three best, but if you were picking three offenses this year, not next year or last year, but just this year, what would be your three? And we're going to rank them, and I'll get mine as well. But, Simon, I'm eager to hear it, man, because I don't think this is as easy as the defensive stuff was necessarily. I kind of have a lot of favorite defenses, and I struggled here on the offensive side, so I'm eager to see what you got.
Offense is hard. I'm trying to project a little bit into what's going to work in the playoffs. So I'm also thinking back to all of our shows and what we've talked about, and when we break down these games, what works really well. The first two teams that came to mind are the two teams that I think we've always basically said since we've been doing this pod have been the best offensive lines, which shouldn't be a shocker for listeners, and it's the Eagles and the Lions. Both teams are in the top 10 in terms of offense, both teams in the top 10 in terms of a run game, and it's just because they can do so many different things in the run game. I mean, they can run so many different types of schemes and plays outside, between the tackles, pulling guards, pulling centers, if you're Jason Kelce or Frank Ragnow, really, those might be the two best centers in the game. The things Penei Sewell can do on that right side as an athlete getting out, very much like a Lane Johnson who is out right now day to day, but he should be good for the home stretch, it feels like. I love watching these two offenses, and especially because then the Eagles can also add on top of it. Jalen Hurts can do things, and A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, just so much fun. And then, I mean, look, if I have to pick best offenses, like, I just have to put Patrick Mahomes in there. It doesn't matter who his pass catchers are. You know, the receivers caught the balls this week against the Raiders that they dropped last week, and look what happened. They scored 31 points, and everybody's happy. I know it can get ugly at times, but if those receivers are literally – bringing the football into their hands and holding on to it the way Patrick Mahomes can throw it. And then watching Isaiah Pacheco is always a great time for me. I'd say in some order, it's going to be Eagles, Chiefs, and throwing the Lions, Ben.
I didn't put the Chiefs in, but I thought about it for no other reason than that they have Patrick Mahomes. And I really wish the Chiefs had done this a year or two ago. They didn't. I wish they had traded way up in the first round to like number 12 or number 13 and picked up a Chris Olave or picked up, you know, maybe even Jameson Williams from the Lions. I mean, there's been about eight receivers and probably six and a half of them have worked out extremely well right there between picks 10 and 17 for the teams that got them. And yet conventional wisdom is, well, you don't trade up that high because it's too risky and it's too much, you know, value you have to give up. Well, can you imagine if the Chiefs had Chris Olave right now? They wouldn't care how much draft capital they had given up. They'd be roasting everybody. They'd be scoring 34 points a game right now. But, you know, anyway, they haven't done that. But still, Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback. You've got to think, man, they're just as dangerous at any given moment as any of the good offenses that are flowing smoothly. So I didn't put the Chiefs in my three. We'll get to that in a second, but I was tempted for that reason. Ronan, what's your three?
Yeah, I'm very similar to Simon's. At one, I have the Eagles just because they can beat you any which way. They have probably one of, if not the best line in football, offensive line in football. They have two great receivers in Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. Dallas Goedert is a very, very solid tight end. DeAndre Swift has emerged kind of back as a premier back, maybe not the upper echelon premier back, but you can almost bank on him putting up a pretty solid night just about every week. And then Jalen Hurts being able to do it with, you know, both his legs and his arm. Just talked about him potentially entering that MVP conversation. So, you have a talented quarterback who's, you know, surrounded by an extremely talented cast. It's hard to bet against the Eagles. So I've got them at one. I've got the Lions at two, just because, again, I appreciate offenses who can both run and pass efficiently. And so far this season, Jared Goff has looked pretty good in the passing game. The offensive line has looked outstanding. The run game has looked great, whether it be Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery. And then the receivers, you've got Amon-Ra St. Brown, you've got Jameson Williams, you've got Sam Laporta, who's really stood out this year. So you've got a lot of options on that offense, along with another great offensive line, one of the best in the league. So I've got the Lions at two. And then I had to show some love to the Miami Dolphins at three. You could go a lot of different ways here. But the fact that they have Jaylen Waddle and they have Tyreek Hill and their offensive line has actually kind of played better than, you know, we were expecting them to heading into the season, maybe not by much, but they haven't necessarily been a complete liability. And then you factor in the fact that they have Raheem Mostert and A-Chain, whenever he's healthy, you know, two speedy backs who will just completely torch all 11 guys on the defense. So I've got the Dolphins there at three. And then also keep in mind, all three of their play callers are absolutely fantastic. Between who is it, Sirianni now calling the shots? And
the quarterback coach. I want to say Ben Johnson again, but I know that's not right. Something like Brad Johnson. Well, Brad Johnson.
That's awesome. I love that. Brad Johnson.
And B. Johnson.
Brad Johnson. And then you've got Ben Johnson. And then you've got, obviously, McDaniel. Three great offensive minds. Three great offenses, Ben.
Yeah, I didn't put the Dolphins in my top three, mainly because of injuries. But if I knew they were healthy, if I knew they had A-Chan, if I knew they had Armstead at left tackle, and I knew Tua was going to be healthy, it would be far and away my favorite offense because the design is so perfect. I mean, the playmakers are so fast. They're not just fast, but they're also very good at what they do. When Armstead's there at left tackle, they can kind of field a crappy offensive line and actually run the freaking football and protect Tua for 3.2 seconds instead of 2.5. I mean, it's perfect. Like, it is a legit perfect offense that not only racks up tons of yardage, but scores tons of points. There's nothing to not like when they're all healthy. I didn't toss them in the top three because they just can't seem to stay healthy the past couple of seasons. That was the only reason I left them out. But that is the offense for me. I mean, I love all of it. The designs are beautiful. I mean, it's immaculate from start to finish. So anyway, like you guys, I put the Eagles at the top. And you guys already said everything there is to say about it, but I'll confirm it. It's not because I'm in love with that Eagles offense, but it's because they can beat you so many different ways. They can run the football. They can drop back and pass it. If dropping back and pass it doesn't work, then Jalen Hurts just runs around and makes plays, like, and he is so dangerous. You can stop him for three quarters, and then all of a sudden he lights you up. And we've seen it for the past 2 weeks, but we've seen it for 2 years now. So even though I'm not in love with the Eagles offense, they just can beat you so many different ways. It's just really hard to find a way to beat them. So, I mean, what else would you want in an offense, really? I mean, when you just look at how many different ways they can beat you. So I got them number one. I actually put the 49ers in at number two. They're number three in yards, number four in points per game. The fact that Purdy's back there does bother me. It does concern me. He's by far the worst quarterback out of all these top offenses. But still, when they're all together, which they usually are, they too can beat you in just almost every way. Their quarterback can't run, but they don't need him to. They can beat you on all the crossing routes, all the mesh routes. They can pop a deep one if they need to on occasion. They can beat you with the tight end up the seams. They can run the football almost at will. Christian McCaffrey can line up as a receiver. You talk about a multiple offense. They have all the multiplicity except for the quarterback being able to run it, and they really don't need him to. So I love that. Plus, they're super physical. I mean, they're just so technically sound in everything they do. I love that 49ers offense when they're healthy. And then I struggled with number three, but ultimately I settled in on the Detroit Lions. You already mentioned them as well. And that's really because of Ben Johnson more than anything. It's not – their personnel is young and upcoming, but it's still not as good as what some of the other teams are boasting right now. But Ben Johnson is just so good at creating stuff. He's just so good at putting it together. He seems so good. Now, the one flaw with the Lions is their points per game have been a little up and down, and they haven't every single game. We saw it Thanksgiving. Not every game has produced the points needed to win, even though the yardage has been there. But still, it's a tremendous offense, and Ben Johnson knows what he's doing, and he's going to be a head coach whenever he wants to be. So, you know, he's going to kind of pick his spot and move on from Detroit. But that's my top three as well. So, all right, any more talk on offenses here? Are we done? All right, let's move on. Ronan, your final thing from the NFL this week.
Yeah, you know, we took a look at the Panthers. Let's take a look at the rest of the NFC South and how exciting it is at the moment. The Falcons currently lead with a 5-6 record as they just beat the Saints, who trail with a 5-6 record as well. The Falcons currently own, I think it's based off of the division record, correct? Right, for tiebreakers. So Falcons are 3-0 right now. The Saints are 1-2, so they've got some ground to make up on if they end up with a tie, or else the Saints might end up being the odd man out in this very, very interesting NFC playoff picture as we near the end of the season. And then the Buccaneers only a game back because they're 4-7. A very interesting time in the NFC South. None of these teams necessarily scream upset special in the playoffs, right? But hey, you know what? You never know. So if you want to, you know, keep an eye on that, you know, Desmond Ridder, maybe a Derek Carr, maybe a Taylor Heineke, maybe a Baker Mayfield. You never know who you're going to see in the playoffs, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. My one last thing is going to be the Denver Broncos. Continuing to win. They're on it's a 5-game win streak. They're 6-5. Hats off to the crew. I mean, they're working their way into the playoffs. They haven't got it done yet, but they're doing it. You know, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Buffalo for sure. Don't look in the rear view because Denver's sitting right there. I mean, you know, Denver's playing better than those other teams right now. Even though teams have better records, Denver's playing better than those other teams. And Russell Wilson's never going to be the old Russell. Like, he's very slow running the football, in case you haven't noticed. And he can't throw it as deep as he used to. But still, man, like, he's playing good, and the defense is playing pretty good, and John Payton's making good calls, and they're winning, man. 5-game win streak, 6-5. They are working their way into the playoffs. Somebody's going to have to stop them. We'll see if it happens. That's what I got. Simon, give us your last and shut it down.
All right. I should mention, I meant to mention this, the Texans did claim Derek Barnett off waivers from the Eagles. So Super Bowl changing move there. That'll be interesting for that young defense. Ronan, big Derek Barnett fan. My actual last thing is we all mentioned the Lions as an offense that we love. I specifically talked to running game and offensive line. Ben talked Ben Johnson. One of us mentioned the quarterback's name, and that is Jared Goff. And I just want to put everybody on alert. Jared Goff might be turning back into a pumpkin. 6 turnovers in the last 2 games. Everyone, just keep an eye on it. Just keep an eye on it. I've never fully bought back into the Goffenheimer. I don't know. We need some sort of nickname for this. Shout out my guy Muhammad Mehdi. But that is all I have. That is all we have. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. We will be here with you all through the rest of the season. Obviously, we're going to have some great stuff to break down as the weeks go, as we get closer to the playoffs. So thank you all so much for sticking around. Make sure you're listening to all the other shows on Box Score Network. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at BScore Network, our pod specifically at Stat Sheet Pod. For Ben, for Ronan, and for me, thank you all so much for listening. Have a good one. We will talk to you next week.